Good evening, and welcome to Off the Bookshelf. This is your host, Deborah Herman, and with me tonight is my guest and business partner, literary agent, Jeff Herman. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. And tonight we're going to talk about some of my favorite topics. We have decided to launch this new show, Off the Bookshelf, to talk about writing, publishing, and perhaps in the future we're going to introduce some awesome new voices in publishing, self-published authors, some of the mainstream traditional authors, and we're going to have a lot of fun. So tonight I wanted to introduce you to the audience. You are a literary agent. You've been in the field for quite a time now.
About over 20 years.
Well, I was going to be maybe a little more evasive about that, because not only does it date you, it dates me.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, I think the first thing I want to talk about are the changes that are happening in the publishing industry. People have been, you know, I follow a lot of blogs. I do a lot of Twitter. I'm really into the whole digital world now, and people are wondering what's happening, and are we going to continue to have books, and are publishers still alive? What do you have to say about that?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of changes, and all of it is really good for people who write. And, I mean, no question we're going to have books. In fact, we're going to have maybe a lot more books than anybody can actually deal with, because it's become so inexpensive to write and publish a book. Well, to write a book is free other than your time. But to publish a book today, is you can do that for a few dollars, you know, especially if you do it digitally. So the opportunities for writers to get themselves published one way or another are tremendous. They've never been as fantastic. The issue, of course, is being published doesn't mean that anybody knows you're published.
yeah, of course. So we've got a couple of issues that arise from what you're saying. One is, writers are always going to write. So we know that because we've been working with writers and teaching them for over 20 years. You know, aside from being literary agents, we also teach writers. And we've seen many changes as we've gone through different incarnations of the publishing industry. And we've seen small houses consumed by large houses and conglomerates and all of this. But writers will always write. So the first question that comes up for me and for a lot of people is, even though they're writing and they're self-publishing, or they're, you know, what's happening to the quality of what's out there, and how do we know what we even want to read?
Well, you know, if you're traditionally published by, let's say, Random House or Simon & Schuster, one of the reasons why that's a good thing is because they're rejecting 99.98% of the submissions that they receive. But, you know, you're talking about not just what comes in through agents, but through unsolicited directly from authors. So when you have the imprint of a Random House or a Simon & Schuster, you have instant credibility. Whereas if you so-called self-publish, you don't have that instant credibility because anybody can self-publish, but not anybody can be published by a brand name publisher. And there's many ways to compensate for that. But for the consumer, you know, the consumer is going to be wary at first about who you are and what your book is, even if they hear about it, until they have a reason to feel otherwise, until they have a reason to think that it's worthwhile to buy your book. And that means that as a self-published author, you need to do a little more to sell yourself than you would as if you were with a Random House or a Simon & Schuster.
You know, I was also thinking that in order to level the playing field, because we are seeing some self-published books that are selling like crazy, really the self-published author or any writer needs to consider the standards that are met by the traditionally published books in developing their own projects. They need to make sure that they're not just, you know, sending things out into the world that are half-baked or not well-written, you know, just because it's easy to come up with an idea and put it up on either pay to have someone publish it for you or self-publish it through an author services company, you've got to make sure that it's good. You know, before we even talk about marketing.
Well, yeah, I mean, quality control, editorial quality control is always incumbent upon the writer, regardless of what route they're able to follow. Now, but let's not always assume that just because a book is traditionally published that it's necessarily high quality. I mean, we want to assume that, but there are many reasons why a publisher, a brand name publisher, will publish a book. One of the reasons is they may think it's a good book, but they may not actually, in their heart of hearts, think that it's such a good book, but there may be reason for them to believe that they're going to make a lot of money publishing it anyway, because the author has a great following. It could be that the author is a celebrity. It could be that the author is doing 1,000 speaking dates a year. I don't know how you could do 1,000 a year, but whatever it is.
I'm sure some people do. But
if
you
sell a lot of copies, a publisher will overlook the lack of editorial quality to an extent.
Well, it's only to an extent, because I think we've seen even recently that we've worked with some clients who've really done the job of developing their platform, which is the word that most writers hate to hear. But, you know, a couple of years ago, everything was platform, 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 with the assumption that you had the book, that you were delivering the goods. And so what people have been doing is trying to build their platform so that when they are submitting to an agent or a publisher, that they're going to be taken more seriously. But I think what we've actually been finding is that even people with great platforms still have to recognize that in the world of the printed word, you have to have something that people are going to want to read. They've got to see something in it for them. So if you're building a platform, you want to also focus on what's your message and what's your hook. That's really important, because we've had to, you know, reverse engineer certain projects because the person does have a great platform, but they're not as necessarily focused and on what they're trying to say or what they're trying to provide.
Well, you know, I don't mean to sound cynical, but any publisher, every publisher has their price. I mean, it may take a lot of money, or it may take a huge commitment on the top of, you know, by the author, and obviously only a small fraction of us, of who are writers, you know, would be able to necessarily meet that price. But be that as it may, let's look at a recent self-published book that is a phenomenon. I mean, it's like outperforming everybody, 50 Shades of Grey, and all the various spinoffs that are coming with that. That is a book that began as a self-published book, and it did not become a bestseller by chance. It became a bestseller as a self-published book because the author was brilliant in marketing it. And once it became an established bestseller, publishers, traditional publishers, obviously wanted to get their hands on it. Now, the reality is that people who have read the book will confide to me. I've never read it. Maybe the best book ever written. But people who have read it say, you know, it's not that well written. But yet, millions of copies have sold. So what does that tell us?
Well, before you go on, I think it tells us a lot about society and how repressed we are. But other than that, from a publishing standpoint, I know that it has made a tremendous difference in how the entire publishing community is looking at self-publishing and saying that it is indeed viable. It is not the secret stepchild or whatever, that if you do it right, you can do it and you can be successful at doing it. Not that everybody should start writing, bondage erotica, but if you find your purpose and you follow all the protocols that we try to teach people, we'll be teaching through this show. We've got our, as we'll talk about later, we've got our writers, agents, and editors network, which we're doing a relaunch. And actually, the namesake of this show is our own, or at least my own. I'm moving a little bit away from traditional agenting, and I actually am working with a company called Off the Bookshelf, which is a self-publishing website. So, we're really trying to look at all the possibilities of what publishing is going to look like in the next 10, 20 years. I hope to be around for the next 50, but, I'll probably have to be bionic. Since I've known you and have been working with you, we've always tried to be a little bit on the, pioneering forefront of the things that are coming next. You did that with the original Writer's Guide. You did a lot of things that changed a lot of people's minds about publishing and getting past gatekeepers, I know we're trying to look at everything that's going to be happening.
Well, what's really great about self-publishing is that it's a new frontier and that there really are no rules. There are methods that have worked, and it's really good to try to see what those methods are and see if you can replicate them, if you can determine what they were. And then there may be things that nobody else has tried that you can try, and it may not have anything to do with money. It may cost no money. It may cost you some time and some, using your brain. But at the end of the day, it's always about word of mouth. I mean, whether we're talking about a technology that's 100 years old or a technology that's just emerging, at the end of the day, you have to get people to tell other people that this is a book that they ought to buy.
I want to point out that it intrigued me, of course, that you said, it's so exciting, there are no rules. That would intrigue you. You like to create the rules, or you certainly have never met a rule that you didn't want to bypass or when it comes to emerging challenges in the publishing arena. You've always been known for very creative marketing plans. I mean, I think you were one of the first people to do a tie-in with a book that you were representing and a big marketing plan. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? It was back, I think, in the 80s.
It was a book called Getting Hired. And my idea was that companies at that time who were marketing consumer products specifically to college students would probably want to give that book to college students with the company logo printed on the cover and maybe some other inserts that, were favorable about their product. And it would just be something they would give away to college students as a marketing vehicle. So we pitched it to beer companies. At that time, you could buy beer if you were 18. I think now the drinking age for beer is 21. But at the time it was 18, and sure enough, Coors.
Those were the days.
Coors.
I'm just thinking about when I was 18. Those were the days. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
So Coors bought 200,000 copies of a special printing of the book. They really didn't do anything to mess with it. They basically just, it was a very soft sell for Coors. They just put their logo on the cover of the book, in the binding, on the binding of the book. It took off, I think it was Prentice Hall or whoever. They just, you can do whatever you want when you do a special printing. I mean, they had to pay Prentice Hall to print it and everything. And then they distributed it through all the college placement offices just to give away free to any college student who wanted to walk in and get advice about how to find a job upon graduation. And I think it was a real goodwill, you know, product for them because students used it. Yeah.
And had all kinds of implications for when you don't get hired or if you I think, but it's such a brilliant, you know, creative marketing plan that certainly was something that, you know, you thought about and you come from, well, you have a marketing mindset. You came out of PR, you know, which at that time was, you didn't have some of the things that we have now. Well, only in the last couple of years, you know, marketing itself is being turned on its side because of all of the digital opportunities, but it just took some creative ingenuity. And so people who self-publish now, or even if they're traditionally published, you've got to think, you know, like a writer entrepreneur, because you're going to be driving the success of your book no matter what. You've got to put on that business cap. So, you know, that's something that I think people have been realizing over the last several years, that they can't, it's not about, you know, being on Martha's Vineyard, sipping wine, writing your great novel, although that's certainly wonderful. But even with fiction, you know, you have to think about the end game and who's going to read your work and who's going to find your work.
Yeah, well, you have to be willing to keep talking about it everywhere and writing about it. I mean, one of the biggest questions I always used to get after the Coors deal, because it got a lot of notoriety at the time, was, well, how did you do it? I mean, okay, the idea, you know, that's a great idea, but how did you set it up? And I said, well, all I did was wrote a letter. You know, I went, I looked up the best I could. We didn't have internet then, but I looked up the best I could from directories, who the marketing directors were at different Fortune 100 companies that were marketing consumer products to college students. And I did the best I could to get a name. And then I sent a personalized letter to each of these individuals, to all 100 of them, suggesting this as a good tool, as a good marketing vehicle, and a little bit of information about the book. I didn't send them a free book or anything like that. And the first response was from Time Magazine. You know, they bought a few thousand copies for a college campaign they were doing for Time. And then, of course, the Coors. But it was simply, I didn't even do follow-ups. I mean, it was simply sending a letter en masse. And I think that's really what it is today. I mean, you just need to keep throwing, you have to be Johnny Appleseed. I mean, you just have to keep throwing seeds. And if you throw a lot of seeds and nothing happens, you know, maybe you're throwing the wrong seed, but the idea that you're throwing the seed is the right idea. You just have to always be willing to say, you know, am I throwing seeds that are dead? You know, in which case you've got to make your seeds alive, you know, do a different pitch or whatever. But it's really just a lot of labor. You just got to keep talking about it and until it connects, until it clicks. And you never know if it's going to be the first time you try to make a connection or the 10,000th time that the big thing is going to happen, you know, but you just got to keep working it.
Yeah. As you know, I took a, well, as you certainly know, I took a class at Rutgers University and digital marketing and social media. And one of the greatest things, that I, one of the best things I heard, one of our instructors was Mike Moran, and he's a wonderful digital marketing, you know, teacher, guru. I mean, he started at in IT, and he's written a book that I highly recommend called Do It Wrong Quickly. And it's about internet marketing, but the point that I think you make is that's similar is with digital marketing or internet marketing, there are things that you can try. Nowadays, you can measure them if you know about internet marketing, and there's like ways to analyze whether you're getting results. Some of it is just you look at it and you say, oh, am I getting results? And then as quickly as you do something, you can stop doing it and go try something else. It's not like you're, you know, it's not like you're spending millions of dollars. It's creativity, it's time, it's energy in reaching out and planting those seeds, those apple seeds. And I'm glad you didn't use a different analogy. but the, you know, you're planting those seeds, but you can really, you know, you can really be creative. We are in such an amazing time to try all kinds of different ways to promote ourselves, brand ourselves, and also sell books.
Yes. And, you know, that's it. The technologies that are available give us new opportunities to do more en masse. But it's also a lot easier for people to tune you out because there is so much information going all over the place. And what you need to do is bring it back to yourself. I mean, what is it that makes you pay attention when you get an email? Or what is it that makes you pay attention when you get something in regular mail? Or in any, you know, or if some in a conversation, what is it that makes you pay attention? And that's the key, is trying to get people to pay attention. You can send 10,000 emails out and no one will pay attention if there's nothing that any of those people think is worthy of their attention.
And, you know, I think we call that the what's in it for me. Either you have to be entertaining, intriguing, or you have to be very clear that there is something that the recipient wants. A lot of people would approach, you know, marketing and promotion as a lot of hype and as a lot of, you know, broadcasting, you know, buy this, look at me. And it's very different now. It's more about really, you know, you talk about word of mouth. Word of mouth is one person to another person, they, you know, and that person trusts the original person, and then it goes from there. But it's about engagement. It's not about just messages. You know, people are sick of that. They're sick of just having things thrown at them, buy this, buy that. You know, after a while, they just tune everything out. You know, this is a live call-in show. I don't know if anybody wants to call in this evening. This is our first show. We will be doing this every week, and I will try to bring Jeff on as my co-host as often as he will. The number is 888-627-6008. We can answer any of your questions. Tonight's topic is publishing in general, what you want to know about it, what you want to know about how to move ahead in this ever-changing environment. Again, that number is 888-627-6008.
How do you know if somebody calls?
I think somebody will tell me.
Oh.
Or they'll send me a note. Yes, I just got my nice little pop-up. Yes. They okay. will tell me if somebody calls. That's awesome. And I'm so happy to be back at BBS Radio. The original show was called Soul Odyssey. And now I want to give a little twist to it because I'm so excited about introducing writers and supporting their work. So we decided that we would change it to Off the Bookshelf. But we still like to cover, at times, we're going to cover some esoteric topics and mystical topics because I just can't help myself. And I love also working with spiritual authors and people. We are actually working on aggregating some books. We like to see books, not necessarily for traditional publishing, but we're always interested in fringe types of things. In fact, this is wonderful. We have Ophia. I hope I've said your name. Ophia, I'm not going to say it correctly. You'll have to pronounce it, but she's from Singapore, and we welcome you to our show.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you wonderfully.
My name is... Hello?
Yeah.
My name is Ophelia, and my question is it best to self-publish or go to a publisher and get it published? Like, which has more exposure?
Well, I assume you're talking about the United States?
I just would hope that it can be international.
It can be, excuse me?
That the book, I can get it published in USA.
Yes, okay. If you can get a book, I mean, I have my biases, you know, plus, I grew up through traditional publishing. So, and my observation is that many of the self-publishers, if not most, would have preferred to get a traditional deal if they could have, because it makes life so much easier. There are so many aspects of publishing that a traditional publisher will do for you, and they will actually pay you for allowing them to do it for you. They give you an advance, and they give you royalties. You don't have to pay to do all these things for yourself.
No, I approached a USA publisher. They expect me to pay $5,000 to get my book published.
Okay, all right. I'll take over a little bit. That, if they've asked you to pay them, then that is either a vanity press or what's called a hybrid publisher. If it's a traditional publisher, and believe me, it's so easy to, you're not the first person to have a story like that, because sometimes they make it look like they're a traditional publisher. A traditional publisher is like, as Jeff mentioned earlier, Random House, Penguin, Simon & Schuster, all of these companies that look at your material and say, we think we can sell this, so we're going to pay you in advance, and then they'll do all of the work for you. Now, it sounds like you were contacted by, or you contacted a vanity press, and that sounds like quite a bit of money. Now, sometimes companies offer a great deal in return for whatever they're asking you to pay, only it's very upfront that it's an author services publishing company. And I'm not sure that what you're describing is that. So one of the things, my first question for you is, do you have a way of showing that people will buy your book? Do you have any kind of promotion or marketing platform yet?
Not yet. I have the whatever I've written down. I just need to show it to an agent. But the point is, I'm in Singapore, so there's not much people that want to get it published here, so I need to go to USA. But the company I contacted expect me to pay to get my book published. So, you know, I just give up. I just put the book aside, you know, whatever I've written.
Well, there are a lot of different companies. One of the things I recommend, Writers, Agents, and Editors Network, which if you go to my page at BBS Radio, It's you'll see all of our different websites, but WayNet, WaeNet, is an international social network for writers, agents, and editors. There's groups where you can ask a lot of questions, learn about the United States industry, and we can educate you about other publishing houses and how to approach them, mm-hmm. because there's different ways to approach them. Is your book fiction or nonfiction?
It's about my life.
So it's okay. So it's the story of your life, mm-hmm. and you know, there's a group on WayNet all about book marketing. You may want to join that group and learn a little bit about how you can use the internet, which doesn't care about where you live. It cares about if there are people who want to know what you have to say, and if you can make some changes and improve your chances of finding either selling your book as a self-publisher without having to pay all that money, okay? Or you'll have a better chance of finding a traditional publisher. So that's what I recommend. Start there. Start at WayNet.
Yes,
and write to us there. Write to us there.
I have another question. Well, okay? The thing is, nowadays, there's iPad, there's an e-book. E-book only sells 99 cents per book or whatever. So there's this new technology out in the market, like e-book and things like that. Everything is electronics. Even bookstores have closed down. Borders have closed down because of the new technology era. So, you know, is it best to get a book published or get an e-book form so that more people can read it?
Well, retail is still very strong. I mean, yes, there's been an adjustment. But a lot of, you know, for instance, in the U.S., Borders went out of business. It couldn't adjust to the new reality. But Barnes & Noble is hanging in there, and they have thousands of stores. And some of the void that has been picked up by the mom and pops, the independently owned bookstores in the U.S., are making a big comeback now in many communities. And people thought that they were close to dead about 10 years ago because of the chain stores. But the chain stores, because of their model and the kinds of volumes they needed to do, actually turned out to be the dinosaurs, not the mom and pop stores. So,
right. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, bookstores aren't as dead as people think. They are just, you know, in a way, they're coming back as independents for the people who want physical books. But I think another part of your question is, you know, what format would be good for your book? Not all ebooks are sold at that price. You know, one of the reasons, there are lots of different places where you can get your book converted into an ebook. I happen to choose to partner with Off the Bookshelf because we offer, an ebook on all the different. We have a distribution software that can get it on all of the different retail outlets, but we can also set it up, or you do, because we're really. It's really up to the author. You have your own, you know, web page and everything. But you can also do print on demand. And you could even do print run, except you don't have to. You don't have to have – the beauty now with new technology is that you do not have to have a garage full of books. In the old days, that's what you would get. And then you had to figure out how to sell them, but the biggest difference – for self-publishers is it's hard to get bookstore distribution. So it's really better for the independent do-it-yourselfer to do books that can be purchased, you know, on an e-reader or print on demand, because then you don't have all this money tied up in inventory. So, you know, again, those are questions that you sound like you're really on the verge of making these decisions, but I would just be a little patient and ask some of these questions on WayNet, and we'll answer them in more detail for you and help you make, you know, do like a list and make a decision where you have all the information you need, because there's many options for you. And they don't have to cost you so much.
Thank you very much.
You're very, very welcome, and please continue listening in.
Yes, of course I will. Bye.
Bye-bye. So, you know, I really, the more I think about it, Jeff, I think that, sometimes people self-publish prematurely, you know, and some people choose to self-publish because they're going to make more money in the long run, because it's, you know, they're getting a higher percentage. If they find a way to sell their books, they're actually getting a higher percentage per book.
Well, yes. I mean, that's always been the case, because you're dividing it up. I mean, the pie is different if you're self-publishing as opposed to using a publisher. But it always comes down to volume. I mean, if you're using a traditional publisher, you're only going to get a small percentage of the entire deal. If you're a self-publisher, you may end up getting 100% of the sales price, depending on the circumstances of the sale. But a traditional publisher may sell thousands of copies because of their ability to distribute. And you as a self-publisher may only sell a few dozen copies. There was something, somebody did some research on BookBaby or Lulu or some of those, and they found that that something like 95% of the self-published books through those different services, which are perfectly legitimate and they're priced right, that 95% of those books were only selling about 10 copies a year.
Well, that's pathetic, and that's why Digital Deborah, which is my handle on Twitter, or one of them, for those of you who want to follow learning how to market yourselves, we are going to make a change, because I think I am maybe the ultimate optimist, but, you know, I think that people can do far better than that. If they have a good product, if they get it edited, you know, if they start to understand how to market, because that's pitiful. And some of those books, I'm sure, are really awesome. But it's kind of like if you look at YouTube. YouTube now has bazillions of followers. So if you're looking for something on YouTube, you have to know what you're looking for, unless the person who has a YouTube channel is smart enough to use certain keywords in their descriptions, so that if somebody's looking for, you know, funny cats, which everybody looks for funny cats on YouTube, you know, they're going to be able to find what they're looking for. So it's kind of the same thing with if you're going to be self-publishing. People have to be able to find you. They have to know about you. They have to, you know, you have to use some of the same techniques that traditional publishers use. But let's go back to traditional publishing, because I know, you know, you are a traditional literary agent. I'm sort of going off into this, you know, digital arena. But what's the first, we don't have time to do too much of this tonight. I'm sure we'll do it another time, but what's the first step? If they really, really want to be traditionally published, what's going to separate them from all of the other people who want the same thing?
Well, it really comes down to access, getting access to people who can make decisions. The best way to get access to traditional publishers is to get a literary agent, because the literary agents are the ones who have the access to the acquisition editors. The acquisition editors are programmed to dismiss unauthorized, unsolicited, unagented submissions. Because 99.99% of them are going to be material that is not, they feel, material that it's not really worth their time to spend looking at it, to give it consideration. They just don't have the time. It's overwhelming. They just don't have the time to do that. Whereas the literary agent is only going to pitch books that he or she has full confidence in, And if it's a literary agent who has the confidence of the editors, then anything that comes in from that agent is going to be given top AAA access. It doesn't mean it will be acquired, but at least it means it won't end up in the garbage can or in the spam file.
So is that kind of why some people say it's harder to get a literary agent sometimes than to get a publisher?
Right, which isn't true.
We want to be – don't you want to be considered, you know, mysterious and unattainable?
Well, no.
No, but like – because don't you have – you can't just accept – because, you know, because in spite of what some people might say about you, you are actually very generous and nice, you know. And so I know that as I've learned the business working with you, there were lots of things that I thought, wow, this is so awesome. I really think it's, you know, would be great. And you had to explain to me why, as a literary agency, we could not represent it. It wasn't because we didn't like the person.
Or we couldn't represent it. There are many projects that I reject, that you reject, that go on to do very well with other agencies, and vice versa. And it could just be that I'm an idiot sometimes, and I hope I am an idiot sometimes, because that would mean that I'm human. Or it could just be I didn't have a sense of it.
Was that a rhetorical question, or was I supposed to answer that?
No, it was me talking to myself. But
whether or not you're an idiot?
Yeah, I think sometimes I think any agent and any editor is going to be an idiot several times a day when we're rejecting material. We have to be. And that's why you have so many best-selling authors who will tell you that when they were first starting out, it took them maybe a few years, or it took like 50 rejections or 100, whatever, agency, publisher rejections. And then, of course, ultimately they became best-selling authors. Now, that doesn't happen for all of us, but it happens. You know, it happens. Every successful published author has a trail of tears that they can tell you about. And what does that mean? Does it mean their work got better as they went through all these rejections? No, the work probably didn't get any better. The work probably stayed more or less the same. What happened was is they didn't give up. And what happened was they maybe learned more about how to present their material and how to present themselves so that it would actually catch the attention of the powers that be. But a lot of it is just a war of attrition.
Yeah. But I know that, I know that some agents, an agent is works on a commission. So right. The reputation of the agent or the agency is really the stock in trade. It's what you use in order to get through that door so that the publishers trust that what you're giving them is good. And sometimes it's not going to be as good as something another time. I mean, there's all different levels, but that's why you have to be very careful what you choose. And so, yeah, some things are going to fall through the cracks, but some things are going to be right on the money. You know, I understand you said to someone the other day that you sold one book within a couple of days. You know, other books may take longer.
Yes. An agent has to defend his or her reputation every time they pitch a book or choose to pitch a book, because they're only going to be as effective as the quality of the books that they are pitching to publishers. But also, an agent doesn't want to waste his or her time. They need to have something to show for their time. They have to earn a living. And an agent works on a contingency. So an agent could be working very, very hard all day, all week, all month, all year, and be flat broke. because they're not, even though they're working very hard, they're not selling anything. Okay. So the other thing that an agent needs to be very sensitive to is not only is it good, you know, is it something I can sell and make a commission from, or is this something that I feel in my gut I cannot sell and cannot make a commission from? And it's really that simple. It comes down to that. It's a very self-centered decision, as it ought to be.
Well, you're also a curator, and you learn over a period of time. I'm sure now versus 20 years ago, you have a better sense of, you know, what editors are looking for, what they can sell. Because, you know, another thing that writers often don't understand is that we as literary agents are maybe the first step. Then we have to take it to the acquisition editors, who then have to often fight for it at a committee meeting, a pub board meeting. They're not just going to go say, yeah, I really like it, I'm going to make you an offer. There are many, many, there are many mouths to feed at a publishing house. But often an editorial person has to then balance their interest in a book with the perspective of the sales department. It's a business, the same, you know, what we always have to say.
Getting a book deal can be a very painful process because there are so many layers involved, and you can't really explain it. You can only experience it. As what I consider myself to be a veteran, you know, it's not that I've necessarily learned what publishers want and don't want. I don't know that I really ever want to learn that definitively. it's good to always try to think that maybe I don't know everything. But what I have learned is more about myself. And I've learned more about what I can be effective with and what I can be less effective with or not effective with. And as long as I stay true to that, I find that I can be really good for what I do for myself and what I accomplish for the client. And that's sort of what the writer has to do. The writer needs to be to know themselves and be true to themselves, because what, you know, one thing we haven't really been talking about is the art and craft of writing.
We're going to have to save that for another show, because we actually are coming up to the end of our hour. So I want to make a couple of announcements to our audience. I told you it was going to go fast. There's so many topics to cover, and certainly I'd like to devote a lot of time to the craft of writing. Our listeners can certainly look at your website, which is jeffherman.com. We would love to direct everyone to waenetwork.com. That's Writers, Agents, and Editors Network. And our Twitter, we have a Twitter and a Facebook. So for Twitter, it's at Waynet. We are also launching what we're going to call Book Marketing Academy. So if you join Waynet, sign up for the pre-launch group so that we'll let you know. I'd love your feedback. You can always write to me at Deborah@waynet.com. I hope that Jeff will consider being a regular co-host for this show, at least when we're talking about publishing. There's certainly lots to learn, so we'd love to know what topics you want us to cover. We're both veterans in the industry. I've also been on the writing end of things. And I'm going to be reintroducing my book, Spiritual Writing from Inspiration to Publication. So I'll let you know when that comes out, and it's updated for the digital age. So again, lots of great things to talk about. We want to encourage you to continue writing, and we can help you find your way into publication one way or another. Any last words, Jeff?
If you're a writer, love yourself.
Absolutely. Love yourself and be true to your passion and your truth. So I got the last word. Any last words?
Have a really great week.
On that note, good night, everybody.